NFL Podcast.
Is the true star of Hard Knocks.
Welcome to another edition of the Around the NFL Podcast. My name is Dan Hansis. I come to you from a virtual room filled with some heroes. Mark Sessler, Greg Rosenthal. It's time for the draft to get here, as Trevor Lawrence could clearly attest to. Here's the comment that Trevor Lawrence made in SI that led to a firestorm in the sports talk world. I want people to know that I'm passionate about what I do, and it's really important to me, but I don't have this huge chip on my shoulder. That's everyone's out to go get me, and I'm trying to prove everybody wrong. I just don't have that. I can't manufacture that. I don't want to. He gets killed for it, and Greg, he has to go on social media and clarify his thoughts. That's draft madness in a nutshell, especially this time of year.
That is one of the dumbest storylines that we've ever heard in NFL circles. And that's saying a lot for the offseason. But I would put this near the top. Our network, ESPN, like people going back and forth about what this all means. And I thought like I was losing my mind watching it. What am I crazy? Like where were you guys at with that? That like a person couldn't find motivation in different ways other than slights, that there aren't all sorts of ways that athletes and people who are great at anything find motivation, that ultimately motivation from within might be better than like needing to find it for some outside source. I don't know.
I could not be more with you. I would just say, like, I am definitely someone that I get motivated by negative things that happen to me, negative things that are said to me or about me. That will fire me up, but do I think that that's healthy? No. And do I think that's the only way that an athlete could be motivated? No. And do I think this is the most ponderous storyline that has been dropped into our laps all off season? Yes.
It's the Brady effect. I mean, ever since Tom Brady became the most famous case in sports history, in American sport history, of finding motivation from slights and becoming the GOAT, now that's got to be the path that everyone takes.
And Jordan. It's like we're just Jordan, coming off the last dance, I guess.
Yeah,
you know?
Of course. It's funny because Trevor Lawrence is one of the great prospects that we've had come into our league, really since Peyton Manning, they say. But you haven't heard a lot about him because the way the draft industrial complex works, there's no reason to talk about a guy that you know is going number one. But I'll just say this about him, and I've come to peace as a Jets fan not getting him. They would have had to go 0-16 to get him, as it turns out, and only two other teams did that in 40 years or whatever. So that was probably not in the cards. But when you look at this dude, he strikes, and this is coming from a non-college football fan, so I haven't seen him the last couple of years as much as other people. He looks like the version of a quarterback prospect superstar physically. I mean, if you could go back and redo a Jerry Maguire and replace Cush's character, Jerry O'Connell, it would be Trevor Lawrence. He looks like he's cut out of granite and was destined to be one of the great quarterbacks ever. So Jaguars fans who are kind of been in the background, despite being in the very front, there's every reason to be so excited about this dude, because not only does he have this impeccable pedigree and the success he's had, he just looks the part, and I think that matters.
And it's part of why no one's ever doubted him before. I mean, no one has doubted him. I'm glad you brought up Manning. Who doubted Peyton Manning? Did you get a sense that Peyton Manning became one of the all-time greats by checking off people on the list who didn't think he was going to make it? No, everyone thought he was going to make it the whole time, and he did.
Right.
Because
these guys
loved
are different.
Football. Because he loved, and like, you don't get to where Trevor Lawrence is without like an incredible desire to get there too, or enough desire. And I don't know, I guess I watched some of the coverage and I realized, look, I'm not motivated by slights in general. Like but I understand that everyone is different. And I couldn't get over just like the arguments between people that like didn't recognize that maybe other people didn't get where they are. Like maybe they got to where they are in their lives for different reasons than you did. Like there's all sorts of ways that people
we're just wired differently. And like, he's just being honest about what he knows about himself, and you know, it completely spun out of control. I mean, I found the only joyful thing on the draft coverage coming out of last week was this Zach Wilson Chipotle burrito ad. I find him quite delightful, and
I haven't seen that. I need to see
Dan and I were texting because I also think Zach Wilson is more than twice some of these guys' age. I am at least, and like he is the youngest looking quarterback prospect I can remember ever in my life. I mean, he to me looks 14 years old.
He could pass. There's no way he's getting into bars the way he looks right now.
I mean, Dan and I aren't twice his age, you know, yet. So
I did clarify that I am titanically older than you because I was born like 6.5 years before you or something.
Here is Zach Wilson, just for the record, just to have it for everyone, because I am having this burrito, by the way. I've already decided this. There's a Chipotle right down the street from my new house. I am going to order this, and on draft night, if things go the way everyone sees it, I will be having Zach's go-to, which is white rice, black beans, chicken, tomatillo, green chili salsa, and guac. That's pretty good.
They better call it just like the Zach. I mean, at least in the New York, New Jersey area, correct?
Well, that'll be a good like test of it that. Because if you eat that right when he's picked, and we wait until after the first round, you know, to tape the podcast, we can just see where you're at, you know, see how it goes.
Are you guys like talking about this? Like, this is some huge, like, that's like, there's only like three.
It's also the most basic order ever. It's like I'll have the plane. But basically, I'll have the average stuff that you put
don't
on
rain on our parade.
Have you been to Chipotle? Like, I'm just confused.
What?
Yes, we've been there. What do you mean?
Basically, it's a build-your-own burrito establishment.
Yeah.
And you put in any ingredients you want. I mean,
his are just kind of like almost like the most basic standard. Like, there's not much flavor to it. Yeah, it's like,
hold on.
Hey, I'll just have a burrito.
Excuse me, basics. There are like there are multiple types of tortillas you can pick, and there are at least 18 to 20 different ingredients.
Right, and so he chose like the three most
common
ones.
There are like thousands of different ways you could build your own burrito.
Yeah,
so
but
it's
like
not just there's just one.
Chicken and guac and white rice.
Right, I think the point is he chose like the most, you know,
you're making
like
it
there
sound
wasn't anything
like
special to it. It's probably one of the most popular orders.
Right.
For Zach Wilson. So that's good. That's good branding.
I feel like you guys are missing something here. No one's saying he's trendsetting here. It's just what he likes. And I'm going to get that to celebrate him. Like maybe your beloved Lamar Jackson, Greg, has an order at Chipotle that's so off the charts that people bow down when he gets in line because it's just so different. It's not really what Chipotle is about.
No, I'm glad you clarified because
what they are about, though, is giving celebrities and like Zach Wilson a card that they can get one free burrito every day for the rest of their lives. And so that's a pretty good offer. Zach Wilson can go there.
That's too much Chipotle, though, isn't it?
Well, you don't have to go every day, but just anytime you feel like it.
According to our buddy Tice that was on the show last week, maybe Zach could use a couple Chipotle burritos to build up a little bit of that frame.
Sure.
So I'm not against that either. All
right. Do you remember we had an editor in our newsroom, Max Meyer, who would go to Chipotle and get two giant burritos. That was his lunch. And this guy weighed about 140 pounds and would always order double wherever he went. Did he order a chicken? He'd order two full chickens and bring it back to the newsroom and eat it. I was mystified by his eating habits, but that word.
That's sometimes a little bit of a, like I'm a skinny guy with a big appetite trick is you order something huge and then people just go, whoa, dude, I didn't know you had an appetite like that. And then you check in about 15, 20 minutes later and like a quarter of the burrito's gone. And that's why he's 145 pounds. I'm not saying Max was somebody that was doing that. I don't know if he was housing the two burritos. And if he was, he's a miracle of modern science. Let's just be honest about it.
We need to investigate further.
Skinny guys who order as a move to fake make it seem like they can put down a lot of food is on Dan's radar. I wouldn't have guessed it. I wouldn't have guessed that was a thing.
Yeah, no, I always, I mean, I clean the plate, as you could tell. Like, if I get a big burrito, I eat the big burrito.
Well, you go out with me. I'm a healthy eater. I don't over-order anything, but I'll put, if it's good, I always put it down. I'm right there with you.
No, you're not on the radar.
I've seen Greg eat large meals, though. Greg is a large meal guy.
Not a veiled shot of Greg there.
Yeah.
Not a
Meyer. Not a Meyer.
I love Max. I hope he's doing well wherever he is.
SI.com.
Yeah, he's running
the gambling. How about that? Did he write the article on Trevor Lawrence? I don't know. He could have.
I don't think so.
We're going to talk some MVP odds. Greg is just like feeling himself right now because the NFL entered into a official partnership on multiple levels in the sports betting industry. And we're going to talk a little bit about that in today's show. But while we're in that realm, yes, MVP odds. Vegas is post those, and it includes quarterbacks, of course, but all different position players. So we're going to go through those. And first, though, we will start with some news, including the retirement of an all-time good guy.
The 49ers send two receivers wide right, two tight ends wide left. Smith in a gun with Gore on his left hip. Third down, Alex takes the snap. Alex looking.
He's got it.
In post, and it's got it. Caught. Touchdown. Touchdown, 49ers. Vernon Davis with the play of his life. Alex Smith with the play of his life. And the 49ers are 9 seconds away from playing for the NFC Championship. Can you feel Candlestick?
See, that's why, boys, you cut the radio call on the flagship show, not the TV call. KNBR, years ago, to me, if I look at the great playoff games in the history of the NFL in the 21st century, that division round matchup, I believe it was divisional round, between the Saints and the Niners at Candlestick, where Alex Smith went toe-to-toe with Drew Brees, peak Drew Brees, and came out on top with that big throw. That's my favorite Alex Smith memory. The former number one overall pick announced via Instagram that he was retiring after 16 seasons in the NFL, 7 with the Niners, who chose him first, as I said, back in 2005, 5 with the Chiefs, and then 3 more with Washington. He's the reigning comeback player of the year. Everyone knows the story of the broken leg, and he nearly lost a leg, and his life, for that matter, a couple years back. Here's a little bit of what Smith had to say in his Instagram goodbye post.
2 years ago, I was stuck in a wheelchair, staring down at my mangled leg, wondering if I'd ever be able to go on a walk with my wife again or play games with my kids in the yard. Putting my helmet back on was the farthest thing from my mind. I just kept asking myself, all this for a stupid game? But then, someone did something that changed my recovery completely. He put a football back in my hands. I don't know what it was, but all of a sudden, I felt stronger, more driven, and what once seemed impossible began to come into focus.
Mark, this guy had one of the more interesting NFL careers.
Yeah, I even was thinking about our own podcast that, when he was, before he sort of became this guy that we think of today, I think he's largely critiqued because he was just a starting quarterback that, to me felt sort of in the Andy Dalton line world of things on some level. And, I was not an elite guy and was someone that, was replaced by Colin Kaepernick and replaced by Patrick Mahomes. But I really think when he maximized his play, he was deadly accurate. He was smart. He was reliable. And he morphed into this person over these years that it's something about who he decided to become. And it's sort of a study of what's inside a person. And I grew to really love Alex Smith because of that. And one little memory, I was, in the media room before Baltimore and San Francisco had that Super Bowl. And, everyone's milling around and there's various tables of players. And Alex Smith came in with his wife, I believe. He was just in street clothes and he wasn't going to play, and everyone wanted to ask him about, being replaced by Colin Kaepernick. He could not have been a kinder, warmer, more honest and engaging person. When, other quarterbacks, other players might run away from that and not want to deal with that. That's when I was up close to him and I just saw the person and you can feel the energy coming off someone. And I understand why he was someone who became totally beloved by the end of his career with the players that he played with, the coaches and the people that covered him.
There's so much, rightful appreciation of what he did in Washington. But I think if you go back to the beginning of this career, you see that he was defined by that sort of toughness because his rookie season wasn't just bad. It was one of the worst rookie seasons any quarterback has ever had in the history of the NFL. And he was a number one overall pick. there's one of, if you look back at like DVOA, you know, like the worst offenses of the last 20 years, there it is, the 2005 49ers. And I remember covering at the time, like, what a fiasco that was. Mike Nolan was his coach, and people had sort of given up on Alex Smith. The next year, they get North Turner as his offensive coordinator. He's okay. He comes back, and you're like, okay, maybe this guy's going to have a career, when people had already given up on him. But later on, like, he was benched for David Carr and Troy Smith. They chanted David Carr's name during Monday Night Football while Alex Smith was playing. This is 4 years into his career, at the time when we've already given up on most guys. And the fact that he ends up being so good in San Francisco to have a moment like you just mentioned, Dan, in that awesome divisional round game. And then he goes to Kansas City, where they weren't excited about him. He went fit. You know, the team went 50-26 while he was there. And I know it's like, OK, it's not a quarterback stat. That's true. Well, he touchdowns and interceptions are a quarterback stat. He threw 102 touchdowns with 33 interceptions while he was in Kansas City. So, like, to have the sort of career that he had after the start that he had, which wasn't like a bad year that I mentioned, it was a very rocky 5 years as a number one overall pick with all the criticism in the world. And then to carve out what he did, you sort of saw the man and the quarterback that he was before he got to Washington, and ended up kind of showing the whole world like what character he had, because he was a badass, and he maxed out. That's all you can ask.
17 surgeries on that leg after that Grizzly break, and there was a ESPN special on it that detailed that he not only nearly lost a leg, he could have died. It was that touch and go. So the fact that he came back and played last season and started for a Washington team that eventually made the playoffs is amazing. I think it's also interesting that he was considered in Jacksonville as a backup to most likely Trevor Lawrence, and that Jacksonville's medical team came back spooked by what they saw. And it makes you think about what he played through last season and how much danger he probably was in. And it just makes it all that more courageous and crazy that he did come back to play after what happened. I just think he had one of the most interesting roller coaster careers.
Mm-hmm.
From where he was number one pick, the guy that got picked way before Aaron Rodgers, and he had to live with that. And then to go on the rise and have those big playoff moments. You remember the game against Andrew Luck, that shootout that he was on the wrong side of in 2014, I want to say, 2013 season. Just a crazy career. And Mark, I was there too. That was the first Super Bowl where we were kind of covering the teams day to day. And he was such a class act. That was so hard to sit there. And the only questions you're getting was, hey, you were one of the top rated passers in the NFL. You get a concussion and Colin Kaepernick takes your job. That must suck. And he just sat there and was a soldier that entire Super Bowl week, which is not easy to do, because the guy, the blindside guy, the offensive lineman that same year, everyone asked him about the blindside, the movie, and Michael Orr just lost it. He couldn't take it by the end of the week. And that was a positive story about it.
Right, right.
Anyway, that's Super Bowl week.
Yeah, just a truly memorable guy. And, you know, I think it's sometimes when it's the same narrative last year over, it's like, comeback player of the year, comeback player that you can kind of just start to become numb to it. But it's like the more you kind of meditate on what he went through, I haven't had 17 surgeries or even two or one. I couldn't even comprehend what he went through as an athlete. And I think that's why other athletes that have been through that hell, because I think rehab and that stuff is a lonely world. And when you look at what he went through, they just have ultra respect for him to get back on the field. But I would say it was kind of hard watching him last year because you were worried for him. And I wonder if that factored into Jacksonville's medical team saying this is just a little bit of a dangerous proposition.
Well, he also was replaced by two of the biggest sports NFL figures of the last 20 years. The fact that he was replaced by Kaepernick and probably always had it in his head, could have I won the Super Bowl? Could have I led this team to the Super Bowl? I was playing, you know, Smith was playing awesome that year and they were winning with Smith. To be replaced by Kaepernick, to be replaced by Mahomes, who becomes the face of the league. It's like that dumb argument about the Hall of Fame that you can't tell the story of the sport without this guy, so he should make the Hall of Fame. No, that's because you can't tell it without Alex Smith. Doesn't mean he's a Hall of Famer, but like he has sort of had a cross section with some of the most fascinating figures in addition to his own career.
In other news, OTAs voluntary, they say. But are they? It's a bit of a tricky gray area in the NFL. And this year with COVID-19 still very much part of our world, there are many teams and many players who are not going to be involved in person with OTAs. On Wednesday, the league issued a memo to all 32 teams announcing that the first 4 weeks of the voluntary program will be virtual before transitioning to in-person work at the team's respective training facilities. All of this last year was done virtually, and training camp got pushed back because of COVID. And more than half of the league's 32 teams have announced via the player union that they won't participate in voluntary off-season workouts. Greg, what does it mean to you what's happening here?
It's worth watching. You kind of, the fact that the NFL announced that it's all virtual till May 18th anyways, that's sort of the push point where we find out more, because I think there's some thought that players who have certain workout bonuses that they want to get, they might show up. Some of the younger players, they might show up. There's teams like the Panthers who haven't put out a statement, and they actually have already started their off-season program. Most of it's virtual, but there are guys going into the facility and lifting weights. It's interesting because what it seems to be is the players are pushing for a more permanent virtual off-season. This isn't all about COVID, and we'll see where that goes.
That was my takeaway too. I think it's about overarching fears about catching COVID. Now they like the Steelers put out a letter that basically said the protections that were in place last year are not fully in place now and remain unclear. So I think they want more clarity about what's happening. But I look at J.C. Treader's letter and I'll read this real quick. He said that many of the changes this past year, like no in-person off-season workouts and practices, the extended acclimation period before training camp, and no preseason games, gave us a year of data that demonstrates maintaining some of these changes long-term is in the best interest of the game. I think that we have a very strong players union under Treader right now, and they are trying to minimize and take away lessons from last year. And right now it's just sort of like, you can put it on Corona or COVID, but I think it has to do more with the culture of the off season to some degree.
And I'm also with you, Greg. We'll see how strong the union and the players are come May, because there's a lot of money on the line. A lot of players have contracts where it's built into their bonuses to be at these voluntary OTAs. So if you really want to take a stand, across the spectrum, some guys are going to get hit hard in the pocket and others are not going to be at all. And that's a bit of a schism, I think, that could lead to some testiness within the union as well. So interesting situation. We will track it here on the Around the NFL podcast. What's the latest with Deshaun Watson? Let's see. Attorney Rusty Hardin has filed an answer to the 22 lawsuits filed against Watson. And according to Watson's legal team, they have, quote, already uncovered evidence that numerous allegations in this onslaught of cases are simply not true or accurate. From March 16th to April 14th, 23 lawsuits were filed against Watson. One has been dropped for now, so it stands at 22. And very aggressive, Greg, the Watson camp on this, calling it a cash grab by people involved with the allegations. So if there was a thought that Watson is going to quietly try to settle this or go a different route, it seems like his team is going all out trying to get the quarterback cleared.
Yeah, it's tricky to talk about this without trying to discuss the merits of each side, which we're not really in a position to do. But I did have takeaways, and one of them was that, Dan, that this is going to last, that he's fighting it, that civil cases usually don't go to court, but he seems like he's fighting it as hard as he can, and so that this could be a long process and it could go to court. And then the other part is more just about the media's coverage of it. I am a little wary of making sure that both sides, for instance, are represented well, because I think it's tricky. This is something everyone is uncomfortable talking about. The higher you go up, I think people are uncomfortable talking about it. But I just hope everyone is using that same energy that they're using passing Watson's agent side of things and their lawyer side of things to the 23 documents that were filed into court, because sometimes it doesn't feel like that's as even. And there's a lot there. If you want to have experts on, or however the media is going to handle it, like, make sure you're covering that side of it too, because Watson is coming with a lot of money, a lot of power. And I think, you know, it's complicated and it's tricky how that plays into how the whole media and NFL structure is set up.
Yeah, I think that's really well said. I couldn't agree more, and I wouldn't add too much other than the fact that I would just go back and read that SI article by Jenny Vrentis that, to me, that cut through some stuff for me. And, you know, yes, maybe in this wide array of lawsuits are a couple of them something they can go try to pick apart? Sure. But does that mean that you throw the baby out with the bathwater? I mean, there's a lot happening here. And it just, from a football angle, like, even last week, I believe it was said by Ian or someone that there may still be some interest out there in trading for Deshaun Watson. I don't want to put that on him, but I did hear that. And it's like, from who and how? Like, from a football, purely football angle, I think that all has to be shut down, because suddenly, like, a new team would be taking on all this? No. Like, this is, like, not right now.
And speaking of Deshaun Watson's current team, general manager Nick Caserio did not address Watson's trade availability or anything going on with his legal accusations in a recent meeting with reporters. He had this quote: "If you want to speculate, you should probably go buy Bitcoin. Focus on that." All right, bro. Okay. All right. Good bit. All right. In other news, a couple transactions here. We talked about Jadeveon Clowney going to the Browns. They, in a corresponding move, or certainly seems like one, the Browns released defensive tackle Sheldon Richardson, who is due $12 million this year. So the addition of Clowney essentially costs you Mark Richardson. Are you okay with that trade-off?
I think it's definitely like a loss. He played well for them last year. there was speculation that that would be kind of like the other lever pull there. You know, I think Clowney can, it's not just someone who plays on the outside. You can play him on the inside a little bit. They have Malik Jackson. They've got a guy, Andrew Billings, who, you know, is developmental. But this was unpopular. This is one of the few things that, from what I, you know, heard little whispers that Andrew Berry has been very popular with players, but this was an unpopular move in the locker room, that Sheldon Richardson was pretty beloved. So I would say this, you know, from a need standpoint, that becomes another need in the draft. They're a little thin there.
Very surprising. Surprising move.
Yeah.
Played well for them. Your boy.
He was really good for them.
Former Jet.
In other news, James Conner is a member of the Arizona Cardinals. This is a little bit ancient now, but we hadn't had a chance to discuss it. But former Steelers starting running back signs a one-year, $1.7 million contract with Arizona, where he will, I guess, split backfield duties with Chase Edmonds. Your thoughts, boys?
I just liked, you know, you getting on them. I guess we were off air last week, just...
Oh yeah, no.
Cardinals having that whole, you know, setting up the team your dad likes. Like, right. They've set the off season for casuals, you called it.
Yeah, it's the off season for your casual, you know, buddy who somewhat follows football. And then you look at their off season and like, who have they added? James Conner, that guy was a big story with the Steelers. And then you got J.J. Watt. Oh my goodness, A.J. Green. What a team! Says the basic who barely follows the league. I hope Steve Keim doesn't fall in that category, or it's going to be a long season.
Sure. I think your take is totally accurate, though. It's like you built an all-star team from half a decade ago.
It's funny. I like the Watt signing. I still do. His contract looks better for Watt the further we got out from it, because at the time you weren't sure what the market was going to be, and he really got top of the market, I'm the man money compared to what other pass rushers got.
And finally in the news, the Bengals have new uniforms. Let's hear it. Let's hear a little soundbite from the video they put out.
Hey, where's Burrow?
Burrow's there. He's wearing the white uniform. He looks healthy. I don't see a limp in that video. So good luck to him on his continued knee recovery. What do you think about these uniforms? They seem whatever to me. The Bengals uniforms have always been unique. I liked them when I was 8 and they went to the Super Bowl with Boomer Esiason, but now I find them to be a little bit cheesy, but also different, and different's good. What do you think, Mark?
You know, so these, all these new like rollouts, they have all these different combinations. And I don't like, I'm looking, you know, down here at the various ones. One of them stands out to me as beautiful, and it's the Burrow white on white. I think it's an honestly awesome look. And I think they did that as, like a sort of from the wilderness version last year, and it looked really clean. I want uniforms in general to be less noisy, less chaotic. But I do find it, you know, and listen, obviously I'm a Browns fan. The Bengals are not a team I've warmed up to in general. They were pulled essentially the same way the Ravens came from Cleveland. Bengals essentially came from the Browns because Paul Brown is, you know, excised out of Cleveland and goes and starts his own essentially revenge team. And they've been a frisky, you know, here and there, but they've been in darkness as well. But to have Paul Brown's name on inside the neck thing, to me, I just find that as a signature comment that you are just essentially struggling to be your own thing. But that's my own personal issue. I'm with you, Dan. I've always found their helmets to be a little bit cheesy. They kind of, here's the thing. You could have gone to Cincinnati and started a new team with a completely different color scheme. Instead, you basically go and make uniforms that look a sort of like a lower rent version of the Browns' current classic uniforms. And I struggle with that.
Greg, there we go. The Browns have won 11-5 season, and look at this guy on Mount Pius talking down to Cincinnati.
Yeah, it is like really important for you that like the Browns are this great franchise. At least we're not the Bengals. Like that's kind of your MO right now, it feels like.
Well, that's been my MO for the entire century, I would say. But it's not just because the Browns went 11-5. I mean, there are a lot of similar parallels between these two franchises. And
you're basically like, Sam White. You're Sam Weiss when he was like, you know, when he went after Cleveland. It's like really important to each of those teams. At least we're not the other team. I mean, if you're Paul Brown, you could say like, hey, you kicked me out there. I had to go start another new team by myself.
I would just say like spinoffs in general are lackluster. And so if you're going to create a spinoff, you know, come with some original fire. And they to me, I struggle to identify the original fire.
It's funny because
now Wes would probably throw a brick at my head if he were here. So, you know,
I get the, yes, he would. He would not be happy with this analysis, but I get the Ravens thing, obviously with you, Mark, the Steelers thing, totally understand and got why that was such an important moment for you as a fan in January when they got the big playoff win. Picking on Cincinnati. I can't get on board with this. It's like a Bills fan trashing a Jets fan or something. It's just like kind of has-beens or have-nots, I should say. Just kind of leave each other alone and focus on the real bullies. I don't know.
Well, they're in the same state. You know, there is, you'd hope for that to be a legitimate rivalry. Mm. And what I'm trying to do is fire them up to make this a real rivalry again.
Oh, now I see. Okay.
It's a Paul Brown thing. Now I realize it. Because ultimately, the Browns try to pretend like they're the old Browns. But they're kind of an expansion team from 95. And Paul Brown being the godfather of football is almost, it's like all they have. But now, you know, they got Paul Brown on the back of the Bengals. It's like, what are they going to put on the back of the new Browns? Like Kelly Holcomb or something? Like what?
Right. It's psychological warfare, and I identify it as such.
All right, that's what's happening in the news. All right, let's get into the MVP talk. But before we do, I think we have a special guest joining us here.
Wow.
Who has some business that he wants to deal with. I mean, here he is, Matt Money Smith.
I was hoping it was Henry to talk about the Chilean Tulane basketball player. That's
Greg.
On
that's not
right
how
now,
you intro a guest. No, you were hoping it was a different guest.
You know what? Yeah. The look of curiosity, then followed by impending dread, is all the introduction I need on the face of Greg Rosenthal.
Yeah, Matt Money Smith. Yeah. There he is. And the reason Matt's here, and I'm going to tee you up this way, Matt, and then I'm going to let you just do what you got to do. Matt, obviously a man deeply connected to the music world and one of his many successful careers. Something Greg Rosenthal said on last week's podcast really stuck in Money's craw. Ricky, can you call that up?
You know,
we're not
some,
forgetting
some original
about
stuff,
the Delaware tapes. Nice
but
try.
Also some like cover songs of like Kiss and, you know, Ugly Kid Joe and Guns N' Roses.
You are an
A
plus deflector,
day.
But Dan and I are not off the case.
Money, the floor is yours.
Yes. So I love the Around the NFL podcast. I listen to it regularly. It's always great, great entertainment, informative. It kind of gives you a little bit of everything, right? A little personality. We get some real life experiences. And in this case, it was Greg and his brother, Dean, who was being celebrated. And I believe you were kind of singing the praises of your brother, saying, look, this is someone who went to college to play music. This isn't just some dude that grabbed an acoustic guitar, rolled down to the quad and tried to get a couple of the alpha fees to go home with him. You know, this is someone who was trained to be a professional musician. And then, unfortunately, you stick him with you got him with Kiss, which is fine. I mean, look, one of the all time great rock bands, 1970s Destroyer, Strutter, two of the great rock records. You then bring in Guns N' Roses for some mid 80s to early 90s fare. You know, obviously Appetite for Destruction, one of the all time rock records. And then somehow, in between those two, is a band out of Palo Alto, California called Ugly Kid Joe. And I just sent a text as I was listening to it immediately in the moment, like, you know, someone's got to be there to call Greg out when these things cut. Like, that band has no business being stuck to your brother Dean as a professionally trained musician. Like, hey, you know, he plays stuff like Kiss and Guns N' Roses and Ugly Kid Joe. That is one that you would leave off of the resume. You would replace it with AC/DC or something along those lines, Greg.
I'm just giving a slice of life of what was being played in bars by 16-year-olds in 1989 or 1990. And yeah, you got your Kiss and your Guns N' Roses, but you also got I Hate Everything About You, the number one single. I don't know if it was number one, but it probably was, by Ugly Kid Joe. It was a big hit. So you play with they played what the people want. I mean, it has nothing to do with him as a musician. It's just saying facts. He's still a musician. He's a classical music composer right now. He's a professional. And I bet he would stand by Ugly Kid Joe.
Well, this
you
is
know? It was a hit.
So this is what's funny about this, right? Is as Greg and I and Mark and Dan, you were on the text thread, something came up as to Greg explaining why he said Ugly Kid Joe. And I think it really speaks to the personality of Greg Rosenthal, right? So here's his brother, accomplished, classically trained musician.
Ooh,
he could have picked any group or any songs, but he said, well, and it speaks to his narcissism and his ego, because he said, well, you know, one time during rehearsal, I got to sing Ugly Kid Joe.
Yeah.
So far be it from Greg to remember on any of the staples or any of the great accomplishments, you know, maybe a particular solo or a Pink Floyd epic that would stick with him. Instead, it was the time I got to have a piece of Dean Rosenthal's esteemed musical career is what I remember as I choose to celebrate my brother.
What, I'm supposed to go crazy about the Stevie Vai, like 11-minute solo down there and bore me? No, I was 11 years old at the time. I'm going to remember the time that the singer wasn't there and you're like, hey, Greg, can you play this song with us six straight times? That's what's going to imprint in my mind, because it is a fun song to just kind of yell out. If you want to just do it in your car today, you'll have a good time, Money.
Money, I hope we haven't lost you as a listener due to Greg's misstep.
No. Okay. No, not at all. I just, I felt... Look, I don't know.
The one hit wonder, you know, one hit wonders happen.
And as I said to you on the text thread, look, because you tried to come back with at least I didn't mention Extreme.
Yeah,
and I
said there's a lot of Extreme going on. Mr. Big, that was another one.
Mr. Big,
that was rough.
Yeah. And I said sometimes you got to fill the tip jar. You know, sometimes you check your dignity at the door and you got to fill the tip jar. And that's what life is like as a cover band that rolls from bar to bar.
And your daughter is a singer and performer. I've noticed. Do you rigidly like go over her playlist and say yes or no to various songs?
This is the sad thing about that question, Mark, and thanks for asking. I appreciate it. I do, and I explained to her that as a former music director that used to program a station and would slot every single song in every single place throughout the course of a 24-hour day. So this is what we're going to do, babe. All right, so I see you're going to kind of open with some Michael Jackson. I want you back. And then, Give Me One More Chance. I said, and then we're going to come with like a nice vibe with I'm Yours. But then I got to come with some rock. So there's going to be some older people there. All right. So let's bring in the CCR right here. And then if you want, we can back it up with one of your pop songs that you want to play. But then I want you to come right back with some rock. All right.
She must find you so annoying.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Speaking of Michael Jackson, you're the Joe Jackson here. It's like, leave me alone, Dad, after a while.
Let me
live.
You know what, Greg? Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right.
He's driving her there too. So, you know,
but I do think some of those, you know, as you see the look, just like you guys, I put my pants on one leg at a time. But when I do,
he's pointing to his gold.
I make gold and platinum
him.
Records. So I know
you have
formula.
The track record. Absolutely.
And she did walk out of that joint. Well, I probably shouldn't say it because maybe the IRS will come after. But she did walk out of that joint with $236 in her pocket. So I like to think
that's awesome.
The playlist maybe had a little. I listen.
Well done.
My complaints and my issues and my gripes notwithstanding, I do not want to derail the Around the NFL podcast.
No, and I just
from further NFL analysis. Too late.
Since too late. It's fine. Since you brought up Extreme, I love that whole era of music, the hair metal, because they were all so conflicted. They wanted to be like badass rock stars, but then they got into this formula's money. I'm sure you knew it was a little before your time, I think, in that game.
Ballad sells.
But like it was like you had to have a ballad on there. So then Extreme would put on More Than Words, and it would be a huge top 10 hit that everyone knows. And then they would panic and be like, okay, we got to name our album something rock. So they called it Extreme 2, Porno Graffiti. So More Than Words is on an album called Extreme 2 Porno Graffiti.
Oh my
indeed.
God.
Indeed. It's all about the presentation.
All right, let's get to it. Money, would you mind sitting in for the rest of the show? What the hell?
Not at all. I mean, as long as Greg's okay with it. Oh, see, there it is. That is pegged so perfectly, just the stinging. Oh, wow.
Well, I thought you were just coming in to talk about more, you know, Ugly Kid Joe.
That is how Greg earned his reputation, with just a very subtle, wow.
Whenever you want to come on the show and in your mind put Greg in his place, you know the door is always open.
Well, you look at
wide open.
Yeah, these guys are too afraid to do it, I guess. I don't know.
Certainly not too afraid, but it's like when you do this with Greg, he's never going to give an inch or say your side of it makes some sense, and it just becomes a total derailment of the show. But in this case, I thought with you involved, it would be fun.
Yeah, well, hey, he still stood his ground. He then played I was 11 years old and playing with my big brother. How dare you? Instead of just saying, you know what, you're right. I should probably celebrate Dean and mention that he played Queen and he played some of the other great staples back then instead of Ugly Kid Joe, which is just
won't
a scourge.
An
nobody won't. You see it even in the face, in the facial expressions for those that are watching.
All right, let's get into it.
Yeah.
All right, so as you have no doubt heard, Money, as the voice of the Chargers, you are plugged in to NFL matters. There's a huge new partnership with the NFL. Greg, speaking of as we get back to the NFL or getting closer to the NFL, you're on fire about this new NFL official partnership with various betting companies. And you were so fired up about it that you made us kind of reconfigure the A block of our TV show last Friday just to talk about it. And Mark and I were kind of shrugging our shoulders, like, I don't know, this doesn't mean much to me.
No,
why do you
cared.
Think
the producers didn't care? We got to get 4 minutes in on Alden Smith getting 400 snaps with the Seahawks. no, let's how about talk about the NFL completely changing course from what they've done for the last 50 plus years. It's obviously been heading in this direction, but I did think the announcement, it was with Caesars Sportsbook and then DraftKings and FanDuel, you know, about being the official partners, was pretty seismic when you think about where the NFL was, even when we started working at it, Dan and Mark and Money, like how totally off the radar. You couldn't talk about it. It was the third rail. And now here they are making business deals with partnerships. And I do think it's going to change the coverage on television and our network. And that's why I thought it was worth talking about too, is I do think moving forward, it's going to be a bigger part of the game and people are just going to have to deal with it.
I would say I feel, not by you, Greg, per se, but just in general, as I see the avalanche of enthusiasm that will be attached to this, kind of like forced to be excited about like the gambling Vegas side of things. And like, I'm not like someone that like pours over spreads and things, but like, will I learn that? I'll learn that.
They got to be careful.
I learned a bunch.
I think you're right.
But
they got to be careful not to turn off the people who don't care. So it's a fine line, but you do think, like, I think, it quickly, like Paul Hornung suspended for the year in 1963. He was Tim Tebow if Tim Tebow was a Hall of Fame player. That's how big of a superstar he was. And they suspended him for the year for betting on sports. They suspended Alex Karras, you know, future Mr. Papadopoulos on Webster, I think it was.
Yeah.
The Outpro for a year. And like ever since then, it's like the, you know, they've been trying to stay as far away from sports betting. That's the worst thing in the world. And now it's like, now that it's starting to be legal in all the states, which our international listeners might not know, it's like slowly becoming legal in all these different states. Now the NFL is getting all about it because they're about that guap. They see it's a way to make some money.
Well, I think there's, you know, I when you mentioned Paul Hornung and Alex Karras, I think it's always, you know, important to remember the amount of money those guys were making to play football at the time, right? And that's right, what the great right, year was. Right. So you could make more money, you know, through the world of sports gambling, and conversely, their great fear being on the take. You know, playing football was not going to set you up to, you know, it's not going to give you a pension. You're not going to be able to live off that salary for the rest of your life. So that was their great fear, right? But now, and I think this is, I think it's in addition to the fact that it's become so popular, obviously, you know, as you mentioned, Greg, DraftKings, FanDuel, partnering with those two establishments, and just look at the market to see what those kind of companies are doing these days. But also, I think the fact that players do not want to risk $100 million contracts or even $15 million contracts, right, to do something nefarious that would put the integrity of the game at stake. And so I think with player salaries entrenched, at least those that perhaps could have a huge impact on the game, save maybe a kicker who could be on the take, but don't have the overall impact in a game to be able to determine the outcome, right? Unless it's in the very balance in the final in the balance in the very final second. So I think that all came together where the idea that players could be influenced, that the game, the integrity of the game could be compromised. I find that very hard to believe. And I think that's a big reason why we're now going to start going down, you know, this road. And I think, like you said, you know, the interesting thing will be how they present it. Is it a second screen? Is it through your computer screen only? Is it part of the TV broadcast? Because you would assume with the fact that Fox has Fox Bets, right, that they're going to want some of that, and they're not going to want it all go to you know, entities that don't have a, you know, don't have cheese in the contracts for those broadcasts themselves.
So I think Al Michaels won't have to be so covert and, you know, hyper subtle about his gambling you know, verbal right, bombs at the end of games anymore. So.
And neither will Greg. That's good too. And I think with kickers too, just to be safe, I think we should start sequestering them August to February, like the OJ right, jury, just like shut them to keep them out of the world for 5 months and then reintroduce them to society. All right. Speaking of DraftKings, they released their NFL MVP odds. So before we go today, why don't we just kick around some interesting players on this list. It may not be a surprise to you, but Patrick Mahomes is the favorite here with Aaron Rodgers right behind him and Josh Allen rounding out the top three, but a bit of a distant third. Money, when you looked at this list, was there a player, and it goes about 25, 30 deep, that jumped out to you as someone that makes sense as a potential sneaky MVP candidate?
Well, you know, there were a couple things I think that jumped out at me. One is, and I think we saw this with Aaron Rodgers this past year, right? I think there's always a sentimental favorite, you know, somebody that you'd like to, you know, man, Aaron Rodgers needs another MVP on his resume. He's arguably the best, you know, quarterback, thrower, whatever you want to tag him with of his era. So, you know, he was able to put the numbers together and they were able to win enough games to bring that to fruition. So to me, I think it's clear, at least I think, I don't know, tell me if I'm wrong, but someone who had to serve his time in Detroit for all those years, I would assume Matthew Stafford's got to be the sentimental Ooh. Favorite. Combined with, you know, everybody likes Sean McVay. He's great with the media. His offense is fun. You could even maybe point to him as someone that, you know, kind of opened things up, even though it's Kyle Shanahan's tree that, you know, that he is the fruit that fell off of. He's a big reason why so many of these offenses look the way they do. So to me, that's kind of your sentimental favorite. Can he put up the numbers? Can he play at a level? Can the Rams win enough games? I think it's tough to see Mahomes Mahomes or Aaron Rodgers winning one again so soon when Tom Brady put up an MVP campaign last year. I mean, you could make as compelling a case for him as you could for Aaron Rodgers. So I think all things being equal, if they're all putting up similar numbers, you look at what's become of the NFC South with the retirement of Drew Brees and, you know, kind of the situation with Carolina and Atlanta, it looks like they're going to probably win a lot more games. Everybody's back. So those two, I think, kind of stand ahead of others. And then for me, I think the long shot is kind of what we did with Kyler Murray last year, and that's Justin Herbert, right? A guy who played behind the worst offensive line in the league last year and still put up 4,400 yards, 31 touchdowns in 15 games, and was without Austin Eckler for 8 or 9 of those games. So I think that's kind of maybe the categories that I see.
crazy thing was they're close together. You know, Stafford was fifth plus 1,500. Brady was sixth plus 1,600. And Herbert's in the top 10 plus 1,800. Yeah. So they're kind of in the same ballpark. Herbert getting some love there.
I'm a little stunned that Stafford's that high. Ahead of Brady, just barely. Ahead of Lamar Jackson. Ahead of Dak Prescott. But there's a narrative built into this. Kyler Murray, to me, he's kind of middle of the pack here, plus 1,800. He jumps out to me as a guy to get behind because he can give you that 1,000-yard season, and he could put a team on his back. And then at the end of the year, 4,000 yards passing, 44 total touchdowns, a big rushing year for a playoff team, and that makes sense to me. He would be, if I had to pick one guy from kind of the middle of the pack, at plus 1,800, Kyler Murray is my guy.
See, I am totally with money on Justin Herbert. He jumped out to me. I don't think this team is going to be anything but enjoyable to watch. We've already talked about my Brandon Staley fascination. So, you know, I marry all this together. I think they're going to be a different club. I am offended that Derrick Henry at plus 3,300 is below Carson Wentz. I understand that Derrick Henry is not going to run for 2,000 yards again, but the idea that Carson Wentz just feels to me shotgun from a couple years ago in this exercise.
You more than anyone else on this podcast have spoke about what annoys you about the MVP race and how it's narrative driven and all that. Like, quarterbacks are kind of where it's at. That's why a quarterback almost always wins. So I'm not talking about from what I think about Carson Wentz, the player, against Derrick Henry, who's a Hall of Fame level running back. But when you're building out odds for the MVP, I think it's close that Wentz, if he had a bounce back season with Frank Reich on a great Colts team, potentially, I think that actually makes sense in terms of odds.
I hear what you're saying, but I just don't believe it. Like, I just don't like Carson Wentz spotted slotted where he is.
Right. Well, that's what you're ultimately picking on. So I'm with Mark that, like, Carson Wentz is one of the worst quarterbacks in the entire NFL last year. There's little reason to think that he's going to be a top 10 quarterback.
At plus 3,000, though.
That's Greg, like 13th. That's terrible odds. No, that's terrible.
To people what plus 3,000 means.
It means, you know, if you put 100 down, you would get 3,000. But right, that is. That is the 13th most likely player, though, which seems insane to me for a guy who it wouldn't surprise me if he's not a starter anymore in a year or two.
Well, I
love one guy above the pack here in the middle of the pack. I think Mahomes is easily the best way to go here. He's still plus 500. To me, I give him about a 1 in 2 or 3 chance every season until I'm proven otherwise, because he's just that good. So he would be my number one. But Dak Prescott down around 8th or 9th at plus 1,700. You talked about narrative driven. I think him coming off his injury, coming off obviously tough, you know, year personally, and just getting that contract. If he plays lights out, and I just think he's that good that he could do it.
And it's the Cowboys.
And it's the Cowboys. Him in the middle of the pack is the guy that I would go before.
So just, you know, I think as you mentioned, Dan, hey, so what, you know, plus 3,000, you know, what's that mean? I think it's also important to remember the reason those numbers are there is because they want action on those numbers. So they're trying to figure out what is the number where we can get people to say, oh, you know what? I like Carson Wentz. You know, I remember the MVP campaign from 3 years ago, $100 to win $3,000. Let's go. So I think that's kind of, which is why you see the numbers change so dramatically when you kind of get out of the realistic candidates. But I think to your point, Greg, to Patrick Mahomes, you know, giving him a 1 in 2 or a 1 in 3 chance, I look at Josh Allen, right? And I think you just have to ask yourself, was it an outlier year or have we seen this steady climb, right? You know, from year one to year two and then from year two to year three, Brian Daboll stays there. You look at their schedule. It's AFC East, obviously, and then NFC and AFC South. So I think that's pretty friendly. You know, their first place schedule gets them the Steelers and the Chiefs. So you just kind of, I think that's what you got to balance, right? The guy's completion percentage was 10 points higher. His passer rating was 25 points higher than the year before. Those outlier numbers, or if the Bills win again, we know they're always a great story, and that's such a big part of it, right? Oh, Aaron Rodgers. They drafted Jordan Love. He's got no pass catchers. They want to run him out of Green Bay. Wouldn't it be something if he had an MVP season? Oh, what do you know? He did have an MVP season. You know, people want that confirmation bias. And I think the Bills were always that great story. And so to me, like at plus 1,300, that's a nice little nugget right there.
It's how Allen got a few votes last year and Mahomes didn't. Because I know he ended strong and I know he was great. You just can't tell me that Josh Allen was better than Patrick.
You know what? I'm starting to like this Vegas stuff because I'm seeing something right here that stands out to me, and I'm going to go take $500 out of the Sessler checking account.
No,
I'm
going to
drop it on Davante Adams at +10,000.
We're not allowed.
$500 out of anywhere.
Gonna do that.
In theory, but I just say it stirs the imagination to put $500 on Davante Adams at +10,000. Hello.
In theory, you know, we can talk about it now, but as NFL employees,
okay,
as NFL employees, the rules have not changed. We are not getting in the mix here.
Not out of the Sessler bank account. I may be, you know, am I allowed to tell someone else to do that?
No, I wouldn't do that either. No, I would say definitely.
Roger Goodell, he sends us this integrity thing and we sign it. You've signed it, Mark.
No one will ever hear this other than the four people on this right now.
I'm feeling very tempted.
By the way,
yes, you are.
Speaking of Vegas, +8,000 for Drew Lock, you're going to have to go higher than that to entice people to get in on that one. That is crazy to me. And then my final thought is, along the same lines as Dak Prescott, it happens every September when he gets out to a hot start. Everyone just is talking about Russell Wilson, MVP. He's never won MVP. He's Russell Wilson. Is this a year he wins MVP? The fact that that's already kind of a construct around discussing Russell Wilson helps in this type of exercise. So if he is allowed to cook, as they say, and has that monster season, the fact that he has not won an MVP and is one of the game's best quarterbacks of this generation, I feel like that at +1,300 is a good pick.
Well, and also I think you have to project who's going to win the division, right? It's probably going to be hard to win an MVP unless you're a 12 win wild card team. You know, you got to be, you know, 11 win wild card team. So what's, you know, for Josh Allen, what's the AFC East look like? For Tom Brady, the NFC South? For Patrick Mahomes, the AFC West? And I think for Russell Wilson, I mean, Are we scared of a Niners team, even with that great defense, with a rookie quarterback? Are you really scared of the Cardinals? And what are we going to make?
It's a good division.
Yeah, it is. But I mean, you know what I mean? It's not like if you're trying to bet Herbert, they're probably going to have to knock off the Chiefs. And that's, I don't know if they're ready to take that step yet. Yeah, maybe they are, but you know what I mean? Like, that's kind of what you got
to
figure out.
It's a good way to look at it.
Yeah. Well, and Russ, unlike maybe any quarterback ever, I think he could change the game. He's going to campaign. I mean, he basically did.
He started
an MVP campaign last year. He got it going behind the scenes and in front of the mic. He's going to be like the first movie producer that really started putting ads out in the trade papers looking for best Oscars, best pictures, whenever someone started doing that. That's going to be Russell Wilson. He'll just start putting one-page advertisements into Sports Illustrated to vote for him.
Do what Notre Dame did for Joe Theismann, right? And literally change the pronunciation of the man's name to Joe Theismann instead of Theismann.
Whoa! Yes. I didn't know that story.
I didn't either.
I was just about to come after you for mispronouncing one of the great Washington quarterbacks ever, and there you go.
Change the pronunciation of his name. Remember Oregon made Joey Harrington Joey Heisman, and they bought that giant billboard in Times Square when they were trying to get him to win the Heisman campaign? Oh, yeah. That's what they need to do, Greg. You take a page from the colleges about their Heisman campaigns. You apply it. You know, Russell can get his, team cook, whatever he calls them. To get on that and just start now, plant those seeds.
Money, you've said it all.
I do. You did. I say too much.
3 to 7 p.m. Petros and Money if you're local, but actually you can get it anywhere now.
You can.
The internet works.
Oh yeah.
I wish they could see the tan that Money has from surfing every day.
That's a surfer right there. Me and the boys actually, Money. We went to Manhattan Beach and got breakfast at this amazing diner called The Kettle.
Oh, yeah. I've been there forever.
I love The Kettle.
Oh, it's awesome. And I had never been there. We loved it. And then we walked, and the pier is right there. We walked out on the Manhattan Beach Pier, and you had all the surfers out. And I looked down at it. I did think of you because I know you're an avid surfer. And I thought to myself, I'm not going to be a surfer. It's not where I come from. It's not who I am. I don't like to imagine myself in the wetsuit.
Sure.
It's just not going to be something that I would do. But I looked at my two sons who are California boys, and I'm like, I feel like this is an attainable dream for you boys because it looks so calm and peaceful. What a great way to spend a Sunday morning.
It is. Bring them down, Dan. And, you know, this is what's in their future. See that? That's me getting attacked by the fins of my board. That was just yesterday or Saturday. So that's
better than the fins of something else.
Where is it? There we go. Yeah, there you go. The spacing in the two fins on the side of the board coming up to get me because the weight was a little too big. And Well, this old man got a little too aggressive, and sometimes you got to be reminded the ocean's boss, not the man in the ocean.
We should all go hang out at the Kettle sometime. Isn't that open 24/7?
It is.
I was going to say I've seen many a person duck under that table and, well, lose a little bit of weight, if you will, after a long night of drinking. That's what I think of when I think of the Kettle.
Can you please tell Petros that he brings me immense joy, and I find his wardrobe to be a total fascination. he tweets out and Instagrams little accoutrements and pieces of jewelry. He is a very unusual man.
Yes, he is. He has his own style, unlike me, who just rolls with a solid polo, nice surfer tan, side part. It's very boring.
you compliment each other well.
Exactly.
So. Do you want to share with the audience, Money, the most fascinating thing I learned about you during our Power Rankings television show tapings was what you use as hair product.
Oh, and I used it today. Yep. I use hand lotion. That is that's an old broadcaster's trick. If you ever go on the road and you forget your hair gel and you've got to be on TV, hotel hand lotion doubles as it'll hold your hair in place. And to this day, this is just straight
Jergens. Like, what are we talking?
I think this is Gold Bond. I think because, you know, I spend a lot of time in the water, so my hands get super dry. So this is just Gold Bond. I know Greg is so fascinated by this guy.
No, I would never have known. I'm into it.
Yeah, no, it's try it. Give it. I know Dan would never, but I think I can entrust Mark and Greg to give it a go.
I have Gold Bond like literally up the hallway, so
give
I will.
It a go.
You know, I don't have your hair, but I do have Gold Bond.
I mean,
Bond.
when you got it going on like this, you just go natural.
That's
you
it.
Know? Just all natural
and clean shaven. Clean shaven today for, by the way, I'll give you this little nugget before I go.
Yes.
Greg, because in honor of you being clean shaven, today's dead guy birthday of the day is Richard Harding Davis. And he would have been, 157 today. Turn of the century, big editor of the New York Evening Sun, Philadelphia Record, Philadelphia Press, very close friends with Teddy Roosevelt, would kind of mock, you know, would kind of share all the exploits of the Rough Riders, celebrate his victories and accomplishments as a man's man. But
not the DMX Rough Riders. This was
slightly before their time.
Yeah. Equally heroic.
But he's a very good looking man. And he was the person that was like, hey, with this square jaw, and these features, I don't know what these people are doing with all the fuzz on their face, but clean shaven is the way I go. And he started a trend at the turn of the century of men actually going completely clean shaven. No mustache, no beard, no mutton chops, none of that, because he had that beautiful face that he wanted to share with the world. And then dude started shaving completely then. So we owe it to him, Richard Harding Davis. There you go, Dickie Davis.
Oh, my God.
Dickie Davis, wherever you are, Dickie. We doff our cap to you,
yes.
Good sir. And same to you, Money. Thank you, buddy.
Anytime.
For joining us and putting Greg in line. And remember, it's an open invite. Anytime. If you don't think that Mark and I are keeping Greg honest about something, hop on the show and have your way.
We need that. We could bring on a heavy sometimes and you can play
that.
We can
sponsor it. Let's get it sponsored.
You got a nice jaw there, too, now that you mention it. It's like, you should keep it clean shaven.
I got that butt chin thing going, you know. It's not necessarily as attractive. But you know what's interesting, I think? Now this is not right. I shouldn't have said that. All of my issues, all of my points of contention, they're trifles. They're ancillary conversations. They're add-ons. They're not part of the driving narrative of that episode of around the NFL. You know what I mean? They're meant to be asides, and then we just move on from the aside. But instead, I hook into it, and I can't let go. and it really is one of my great faults. So I apologize to the around the NFL listeners.
You have nothing to apologize for, and I'm sure the listeners enjoyed having you here.
I enjoyed being
please
here.
Please come back, always. Money, anytime. All right. That's
Try
it.
Taking the kids to the Kettle at about 2 a.m. See what it looks like. Show them both sides, you know. Give them the breakfast.
It's like, Jack, Harry, wake up. We're taking a road show. All right. This is we'll be back on Thursday with another audio show, Friday a TV show. And, yes, next week, draft week, we have 5 shows coming up. How about that? All in the podcast variety. So a lot coming up. This is Dan Hansen signing off for Quiet Storm, the old boss, Ricky Hollywood behind the virtual glass. And, of course, yes. Matt Money Smith and his Gold Bond hand. Until Thursday, heed the call.